You're listening to The Plug with Neil Griffiths.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Welcome to The Plug Podcast with me, Neil Griffiths. Hope you're doing well. Hope your week has been terrific. And it has been for me because Blink-182 are back together and I don't know what to do with myself. It has been a wild few days. They're doing a massive world tour. I've got tickets to see them at Madison Square Garden here in New York and I don't know what to do with myself. I'm freaking out about it. It is so, so good to have the boys back. We'll have more on that in the coming weeks. But until then, I'm so excited to welcome this week's guest, Lauren Maybrew from Scottish trio Churches. Lauren came on to talk about the band's upcoming appearance at the 2022/23 Falls Festival in Australia, where they'll be playing alongside bands like Arctic Monkeys, Lil Nas X, Peggy Goo, Jamie XX, and Ocean Atlee, who were actually on the podcast last week. It was a cool opportunity to sit down with Lauren because usually when we have bands on the podcast, they're talking about an album that's upcoming or yet to be released. Obviously, the band's last album, Screen Violence, came out in August last year. The band have performed a ton of shows across the world, and Australia will be one of their last runs before they end this cycle. So it was cool to chat to Lauren about what the year has been like and what's going to be coming up next. The Falls Festival will be taking place in Melbourne on the 29th, 30th, and 31st of December. Then it goes off to the North Byron Parklands in New South Wales on the 31st of December, and then the 1st and 2nd of January next year. And then finally in Fremantle in Western Australia on the 7th and 8th of January. To get your tickets, head over to Moshtix. I had a lot of fun chatting to Lauren all about the upcoming festival appearances and what Churches are going to be planning over the next little bit. So sit back and relax. Here is Lauren Maybrew on The Plug Podcast.
All right. Lauren Maybrew from The Churches, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks, man. Yeah, I'm good. I'm in my little office room. If there's any weird noises in the background, it's probably just cats because there's two cats in the room. They don't want to be shut out of the room when the interviews are happening, but they can't really be trusted to maintain their chill.
Are they like those cats that like will just bail for the entire day and come back when it's dinner?
Well, they are indoor cats, which I feel a little guilty about because they're little captive prisoners in my house. But I always see signs in our part of the town that are like lost cat Miffy, and I'm like, Miffy's lost. She's dead. Miffy's dead, man. She's not coming back. So yes. But I don't know. I don't feel confident they would survive in the outdoors because they're lovely, but they don't have certain instincts. I'm like, yeah, that's not going to work for you.
Yeah.
So inside it is.
Is it very much like you're the owner where it's like you're doing this podcast right now and you're in this room, so therefore they are in that room. And the second you leave this room, they will go where you go.
Yeah, I mean, I think I must be emotionally needy because I quite like that. And it's fine. I feel like I do have a toxic relationship with cats, but I don't do it with men anymore. So it's fine.
Good.
I can live out. I'll change everything about myself to get a cat to like me. And I don't have to do that in my personal life anymore.
Yeah,
that's
like that.
Growth. That is growth. So.
Well, look, you've got the cat issue. And I told you right before we started recording, I am in my New York apartment because we're not in the studio at the moment. So as there is for some fucking reason in New York, every car that drives past needs to beep their horn. So if it happens, the listeners, I'll just edit this out. So it doesn't really matter to them, but it matters to you. And that's all that matters to me.
It's part of the beauty of the city, you know? You can't have the wonder of New York without the smells, the sights, smells and sounds.
Yeah, there's a lot of smells here, I'll be honest with you. But
yes.
You were, like, as of this recording, like, you just wrapped up a US tour like a week ago, right?
We did, yeah. Literally been home for a week. So, yeah, we finished in Boise, Idaho, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I feel like whenever we talk about America or American touring, I'm like, man, playing in a band and getting to go all the places we get to go, I feel like you have a better sense of what America's actually like than a lot of people who live in one city or two cities for their whole existence. I think, it's interesting to go. Be able to go across the country and see just how massively different all the parts of it are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a learning curve for sure.
Yeah, and there were some pretty crazy venues you played at, one being the Hollywood Bowl, where you played alongside unknown artist Grace Jones. Can you please walk us through that from start to finish?
I mean, I still baffled that we got to do that. I would have paid to go to that show. So I was like, what? You want to pay me to come do this? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, she's just incredible and like timeless in every way. But I was proud of myself because I do like 3 to 4 costume changes in a show, which for me was a big deal because I'm like, yes, we can do costume changes in an indie rock show. And then I saw her and I was like, all right, okay. She's doing like 12 or 15 costume changes. She keeps a microphone on, so she's talking during the costume changes. She's kind of setting the scene, telling, spinning some yarns. And she, like, the physicality of the show is insane. There was one section where she'd been hula hooping whilst singing for a whole song, and then she riffed whilst introducing the band, still hula hooping.
Yeah.
And she's like 74. Like, it just goes to show, it's another reason why ageism in music is stupid, because Grace Jones is 74 and she's crushing it. So
weird, like, side note, Billy Ocean was in New York like a week ago, and I checked, he's like in his late 70s as well, and they're just killing it still. There's no you know, we're old now, we're giving it away. They're absolutely crushing it.
Well, and I feel like that's surely, like, that to me, I'm like, that's a true artist. Like, they're still creating and still doing things because it's what they have to do. And it was really wonderful to play the show with her. It felt like a really joyful experience. Like, there was just so much, like, I sound so woo-woo, but there was it was really beautiful energy. Like, her fan base were really welcoming to us. And yeah, we definitely we've done some shows or open for people at festivals where you're like, I don't know about this energy, man. This energy is pretty spicy. But yeah, for her thing, it just all felt like a wonderful celebration. And we went out and watched from front of house afterwards. And it was just, yeah, it was a wonderful thing. Happy to be a part of it.
I know you are a fan of her. So how professional do you have to be in a setting like that where, number one, it's the Hollywood Bowl. Like, this is not like just
this nonsense in the background. Why? She's decided that now, the cat has decided that now is exactly the time where she should play with the little ball.
Your setup must be great, because honestly, I didn't hear a thing until you brought it up.
Well, I feel bad taking it away from her, but I'm like, well, just put it under the pillow. All right. As we were.
That's okay.
Sorry. Right back to professionalism. You were saying.
My question was actually about being a professional. It was that I know you are such a huge fan of Grace Jones. So, like, how much can you play the part of a fan that day when, you know, there's sound check, you're backstage? Can you go hang out and chat with Grace, or would you rather be the cool, you know, mysterious musician who's in the other dressing room and you're getting ready for your show and that's it?
I try not to bother people, but and I guess that's been an interesting, like, learning curve for me as we've gotten further into our career and we have people opening for us, and like, we've been doing this for, like, the first album's on 10-year anniversary next year. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of odd to be like, oh, we've moved into a different space. But for me, as the opener, I never want to bother the headliner. I feel like when we have to do that, I feel like it's nice to give that. Like, sure. We always try and put something in the opener's room, like a little gift, not like a prank or anything. Like, a little gift at the start and a little gift at the end.
Yeah.
And like, just to make people feel comfortable. But we did get to meet her after the show, and I can confirm it. She was exactly as you would hope and think that she would be. I was getting in the car, leaving, going back to the bus, and she just kind of swept by in this big cloak. And then she was like, darling, your show was fabulous. I loved your makeup. We were talking about it. And then she gave me a hug and then she left.
That's awesome. That's all you want, right? Because I'm sure there are times where you meet your heroes and they fucking suck.
Yes. I mean, we've been pretty lucky in that regard. I also do think that it kind of helps me that most of my heroes are women, so that for the most part removes a lot of the issues that a lot of my friends are facing, where they're like, oh no, my hero did something else terrible.
Yeah.
Like, not that women can't be terrible, but oh my god, now she's inside a paper bag. Excuse, like, pause, I'm gonna remove
that. You know, you're right.
I'm like, what are you doing? Yes.
What's great about this is perfect podcast material. People are just going to hear you awkwardly walking around a room going, what the fuck is she doing? But this
what
is great.
Is she doing? Like, she was sleeping.
She's looking after a pet, people. Give her a break.
You know, I can't be expected to do two things at once. That's not, I didn't sign up for that. I'm a band idiot. I can't do anything.
Is it now that your next show will actually be Australia, which is, again, for people listening, in late December over New Year's? You've just finished this US tour. So what, you've got a nice little 2-month break here.
Got a little bit of time. Yeah, we got some time at home, and then I think we have a one-off festival in Indonesia
Okay.
in November, and then straight down to you guys after Christmas.
Okay. Well, this is a fun time to be chatting to you because usually when I have bands or artists on the podcast, it's usually in the lead up to an album release. Obviously, your last album was released in August last year. So rather than ask the mundane question of how do you feel? Are you nervous? Are you excited? How does it feel now that it's been out in the world for a year? You've been able to tour it a lot, given that this album was recorded a lot of it in COVID. You've been able to get it out literally across the world. I know that you've previously said that albums sometimes are a moment in time. Where does that album sit with you now? A little of what, 14 months on?
Yeah, I mean, the writing of it feels like 10 years ago at this point, just because I feel like so much has happened in life to everybody since we started making it. But it's been really great to get to play the shows and see that the album has resonated with people, because we didn't know for a while if we could take it on tour and what would happen. And yeah, I always get a little bit melancholic at the end of an album campaign. Like, it's quite bittersweet because you're excited about what the next thing might be, but it is the end or something. And I feel like this one, I think it was our best live shows to date, probably. Like, we really had time to plan the show and have it be really thematic and theatrical. And I'm very proud of what we did with it, I think. So yeah, it's sad to see that coming to an end, but it's nice at this point. The album's been out long enough. People come to the shows in like their favorite horror shirt, so they come with the makeup on from the tours they've seen before. And yeah, it's just nice to be able to do something that makes people want to do that, you know? So yes, I feel sad that it's ending, but I don't know, happy and hopeful for the next section, whatever that may be.
Yeah. How long does it take generally, at least with the last few albums, how long does it take for you to kind of sit on that album and say, I imagine during the album promotion cycle, you're very much deep into that album, but obviously some time has passed. This particular album has been touted by a few media fans as Church's best album to date. Do you agree?
Oh, that's very nice. I didn't know that. I think it's one of my, it's definitely my favorite. It's my joint favorite. It's my joint favorite with a couple of the other ones. And I feel like, to me, it feels like the most fully realized version of what the band is. It feels like it's consistent throughout the record. It has a point of view, it's got a personality. And for me, I guess the writing of the record was a good learning curve, because it showed to me that I do benefit from being able to take a little space from something, just because of the nature of how we had to make it. We were all separated, so I did have more time to pore over the lyrics and not be worrying about keeping up with the pace in the studio. And I think that that made for better storytelling from my point of view. So, yeah, I think if I could give myself a grade, I'm like, I think I did my best work on this. And it's my joint favorite Church's record, I think.
Alongside.
Ooh, I mean, Bones of What You Believe's
Yeah.
got to be the fave, because it's the OG. It's the number one. And I feel like that one, Bones and Screen Violence, feel like they have the strongest character to me. Like, they feel they have a consistent character throughout the albums. And I think we were trying something else on the other two records that, by the very nature of it, has to be more not scattered, but I don't know. I feel like those two, first album and the fourth album, have a very specific point of view, which is maybe not as present on the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned there as well that the writing of the album feels so long ago because it happened during COVID. I don't want to make the conversation about COVID. Let's avoid that as much as we can. But like, think about March 2020, around that time. Like, that does seem like 10 fucking years ago.
It really, really does. Yeah. And I thought, I decided erroneously to take my first holiday in like 9 years or something.
Oh, then.
In March 2020, I went
Yeah.
away with some friends for my friend's birthday. And then during that, we were like, I think we need to go back. I think we
Yeah.
need to leave. I think this is fucked, I think.
Yeah.
And then I was trying to write lyrics during that time. I think we had like a couple of songs that we'd done, or we'd all been able to be in the same room to make He Said, She Said, and Good Girls. And then I was on a little beach holiday and I wrote the lyrics to How Not to Drown on my beach holiday, which feels, I like that everyone's like, you're having a good day. Do you want a cocktail? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm having a lovely time. But I guess I'm processing some stuff. I don't know. But yeah, and I think after that, because there was so much isolation involved, it did push me to write the stuff that was clearly bubbling under the surface, but maybe wouldn't have wanted to pull out or been able to pull out had we been in a studio together all the time. So yeah, I think the isolation made for more vulnerability in the writing in a good way.
I remember like March 2020, for whatever reason, Mel C was in Australia. I think she was promoting her solo album.
Mel, get home safe, Mel.
That's the thing. I remember in early March, we were like laughing and joking. She's like, I want to come back to Australia, but that's if I can leave the country. Ha 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 ha. Mm. And at the time it was like, yeah, sure, that's funny. 2 weeks later, the global lockdowns happened. And that's why I'm curious to know with this album and like anything, you know, and a lot of people went through a lot of shit in COVID. Our minds were in different places. With a lot of those songs you wrote or a lot of songs you guys recorded, does that seem like a lifetime ago in that you could completely detached from some of these songs, or in a weird way, does it make you more connected to them?
I think I feel more connected to them lyrically just because I had to do a lot more deep digging than I... that sounds weird. I had to do a lot. There's not a lot of that going on, I tell you. Too much crying. but I had to do a lot more deep diving. I think, I don't know, it felt having done that and then having to share that with people, you're like, oh no, what if people think this is terrible? But seeing people make those lyrics their own and interpret them into their lives has been really special. And I think, I don't know, I think I look at it as like that was almost the time where I kind of was able to stop pushing down a lot of things that I'd been feeling and trying to deal with the last couple of years. Because in the band, it's like, it is a bit of a juggernaut. Like, you don't really have time to process a lot of the intense things that happen, especially as a female in a band. And I think that having an enforced break where you had to reflect on those things, it was, you don't have to worry about keeping everything together because everything's already gone to shit, so you might as well dig into these things. And I definitely feel like I've moved past a lot of those emotions and those experiences. So now playing the show, I'm like, yeah, I can play the kind of theatrical scream queen role and it's not as emotionally intense to me. But I think that's good for the show, because if you're still in the middle of experiencing the thing, I think it's harder to... sometimes it's harder to tell the story or connect with people.
Mm. That's going to be a weird experience in that obviously everyone went through COVID, but you've gone through COVID with this album. And now it's almost like you're presenting what you went through in COVID to the world. That's going to be a little daunting, surely. I don't want anyone to know what I did during COVID, but it was sad. I can promise you that.
It was sad. I guess, yeah, I suppose I was like, look guys, I used the time constructively to unravel in a way that I was not able to previously. but it's fine because I used the time and now we can tour and I won't unravel and I won't be having night terrors and it's all good.
Yeah. Some night terrors, let's be honest.
I only get them now if I'm extremely anxious. Whereas there was a time period on the third Churches album where I would get them like a lot, like consistently, like a few times a week. And I was like, this is not sustainable. I don't think that this, but at the time you're like, well, we're just got to keep pushing it down, carry on. So I think, I don't know, it feels lighter to have, yeah, processed it. And at least we got a cool, spooky, sad, but danceable album out of it, you know?
Yeah, totally. And like, I've had a lot of bands on this podcast, this will be the last COVID-related question, I promise, and then we're moving the fuck on forever. I had a lot of bands on during COVID or right before, or obviously right after, and they were all doing different things. Some decided, let's write another album just because we've got nothing else to do. Some said, we're going on an indefinite hiatus. Some bands actually broke up because they didn't know what to do and it didn't make any sense to be in a band during that time. But you obviously mentioned that right there before that third album, you were going through some stuff. Did the writing and recording of this album, and we now know in hindsight it being one of the most favoured Churches albums, was this an album that brought you guys closer together? Was it a tumultuous time in the band during the recording process?
I was like, you'll never get me to crack. I'll never break. I'll never tell anybody anything. That's the, I think we're very good at that. Everyone's like, Trojans are so nice. They all get on so well. I'm like, yeah, we definitely argue. We just don't tell people about it all the time. No, I think in a way it was a very good re-centering thing because, 10 years is a long time to be in any kind of relationship. 10 years is a long time to be in a band. And I was like 23, 24 when the band started. And like that age to 35 is very different. It's very different headspace, and
Of course.
everybody's grown a lot, but you're trying to keep this little musical baby going. So I think it was good in a way to just have all the other noise around the band, like all the music industry shit just disappeared for better or worse. So it was nice to be able to refocus ourselves, I think. And for me personally, I think it was a really good time. I don't know. I feel like it really just pulled into focus a lot of the things I'd been trying to figure out about, what's the path? What are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to write? What? And I think to me, it just showed me, like, if you do get to do this, stop acting like this is the dress rehearsal for what the thing is. I think a lot of the time, even if I have to go through customs, people are like, what do you do for a living? I'm like, am I in a band? Like, question mark. I would never say I'm a musician or I'm a songwriter or those. I would never say that. And then I think I just kind of gave myself a little talking to, where I was like, if you do get to do it, if you're going to spend these fucks, you should spend them on something you really, really believe in and not be so stressed about, oh, but what if there's no song for the radio, or what if people don't
Sure.
like it, or is it repetitive enough? Is it too repetitive? Ooh. And I think I'd started to get lost in that headspace a little bit. And turns out a pseudo concept horror album, just a thing to
Yeah.
get you back on track.
One of the singles you mentioned earlier as well, How Not to Drown, features the iconic Robert Smith of The Cure. Is it true that despite you guys going back and forth over emails with this song, and you guys did some Zoom interviews about this single, you didn't actually meet the man in person until March of this year? That's, I know this is a weird question to ask in 2022, but was that weird to see someone that you've essentially had an online relationship with for over 2 years?
It's deeply weird, especially when that person is Robert Smith.
Yeah. I mean, I
I
had other
see him.
online relationships when you're 14 years old, when you're on MSN or
Oh,
MySpace,
yes. What a
but
doom. What a doom.
yes, I was like, what's that noise? And then
Spent
when a
too much
boom.
time on Instant Messenger back in the
Yeah,
day, yeah.
yeah. But what is that a weird feeling when you've worked with such an icon in the industry and produced such a brilliant song? You've seen his face on screen, you've worked together, but you're meeting face to face for the first time, despite what, over a year or two of working together? So even asking
Yeah,
that question feels weird.
that's a bit man. In a way, I feel like it was the perfect way for that relationship to roll out. So when we were making the song, we didn't even talk on Zoom. We got Zoom because he was kind enough to do some promo stuff with us. But before that, he was like, I don't have a smartphone. I don't like doing those kind of sessions. It was quite like romantic in the non-relationshipy sense that we were just kind of trading these email missives, and like it's like pen pals, or like it's like a little message in a bottle. You get a new version of the track from Robert, and you're like, oh, gotta check it out. And
Yeah.
I like that when we did meet, it was in like a scuzzy rehearsal space in London, rehearsing for a show. And I was like, that kind of is exactly where I would like to meet Robert Smith, like just because, yeah. And he's just been so incredibly kind and generous to us, and he really is like definitely the real deal. And I feel like he would probably much rather be in a rehearsal space playing songs than sitting talking about songs.
I mean, he openly says in interviews, I hate this. I don't want to do this.
And I feel like once in one of the interviews we did, somebody was like, oh, is it difficult working from home? And he was like, is it hard for you to stop working on a song and go to bed or whatever? But he made the point, he was like, well, that's not work. That's the art, that's the purpose, that's the creation. He's like, this, he said to the interview, he was like, this is work. Like, this, like, what we're doing right now, this is what I think is work. He's like, touring and writing songs is not work. That's what I want to do. That's what I
Yeah.
have to do. And I was like, that's a lovely way of looking at it,
Yeah.
No
And
offense to you.
no, not at all. I completely understand. And as a fan of Robert Smith and watching his interviews, it's cringeworthy, not in the sense of like he's bad or anything. You can just tell the poor guy does not want to be doing this.
It's just, yeah. And I don't even think, like, Yeah, I think it's an incredibly weird thing to do. It's very uncomfortable as a concept to just sit and talk about yourself, but especially for somebody that's just so authentic and such a true creator, like Robert. I'm like, he doesn't want to sit and talk about it. He's like, ugh, leave me alone. I just want to make the stuff.
Yeah. And that's
But
going to be a
yeah.
pretty good sign of where you guys are at because, at least in the last 2, 3 years, Robert Smith's only worked with who else? The Gorillaz? That's about it.
Yeah, I think. Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, an incredible co-sign for us, honestly. I was like, all right, if it all goes away tomorrow, then I'll be like, yeah, I was so lucky and I got to do things above and beyond anything I would ever have dreamed I would get to do. So.
Yeah. And the obligatory question in this interview now is, has enough time passed for us to even talk about album number five?
Ooh. I guess we're kind of focused on the touring stuff just now. We're figuring out that, and I guess it is. It's a poignant time because it's like the 10-year anniversary is coming. It's coming. So I think we're going to try and figure out if we can do some special stuff for that and then see where we're at. See what's going to happen.
At times like this, where you've got a solid 2 months off between shows. Is it really, in every sense of the word, downtime, or are you secretly writing new stuff right now? Or is it all about you and your cats?
I mean, cats first and foremost. I got to make sure that the ladies have got what they need.
Sure.
Got to make sure their needs are addressed, which mostly includes doing noisy stuff while I'm trying to talk on the phone. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like we're like everybody's always like making something in some way, shape, or form, and whether that what that comes out as or where that goes, TBD. Don't know. But yeah, I feel like especially for lyric writing and stuff, there's no substitute for this time period where you get to take in other music and films and art and life stuff. You're filling up the cup, you're filling up the notebook with miscellaneous thoughts, 80% of which will be nonsense, but 20% will get used when the time comes. So yeah, I think kind of in that mode, exploring, gathering, hunting and gathering of stuff.
What are you playing now?
Ooh, what have I been listening to today? Well, I think I'm going to see Florence and the Machine this weekend, so I've been doing
Nice.
a reassessment of the back catalogue of that. And I've been really enjoying the new Always album, which came out last week. It's been good. And the Bartiz Strange record. I've been really digging that as well. So yeah, the cats prefer like Enya or like the White Lotus soundtrack or something like that. But we
Sure. The
can't,
White
not
Lotus
everything can be.
soundtrack.
Yeah, they're really, whenever I watch that, the opening credits, I guess there's like nature sounds in it. And without fail, they will always sit on top of the bookshelf and stare at the speaker when it's happening. Yeah, it's weird. And maybe it reminds them, I suppose they're like tiny little tigers, so maybe it reminds them of like the rainforest or something. I don't know.
That's
Do tigers
weird.
love the rainforest? I
Is
don't
that like the only one? Like you'll play literally anything else and they just,
They're
lick in
not
their paws.
what once my boyfriend made me watch Titanic during lockdown and I was like, it's too sad, man. I can't
Surely
handle
not.
this. Well, but he was like, it's a historic feature, and I was like, yeah, but it's very sad. We know what's going to happen. I can't handle this
I'm
level of
already
tragedy,
sad.
you know. But he was like, yes, but it's really well made. I'm like, okay. But yeah, the recurring theme in that freaked one of them out a lot. Like
Oh yeah, the flutes, yeah.
yeah, she would be sleeping and then like wake up and look really confused.
How
So flutes freak her out. I don't know.
does she feel about Kate Winslet and Leo?
Couldn't have given two shits, really. I don't think that cats are not, I don't know, they're just truly themselves. They're not known for their empathy necessarily. And they don't like water. They don't like being cold. They would just, no. They would have pushed him off the door as well, I feel.
Yeah, well, look, moving forward, obviously you've got the Falls Festival coming up in December over New Year's. There's Arctic Monkeys, there's Lil Nas X, there's Peggy Goo. When was the last time you guys were in the country? I feel like it would have been Splendor in the Grass 2019, 2018.
I think 2019, I think, would have been the last run, I think. But we're really excited because I guess with touring being so uncertain, we didn't know if we would get to come back. And yeah, I feel like Australia is always like feels like a second home or a spiritual home for the band because it was one of the first places that really outside of the UK that we got to go to, and the shows were like selling out. And I feel like there's a kind of emotional and humor, sense of humor kinship between Glaswegians and Australians, from what I can tell. So it's always a good night out. It's always a very Glasgow feeling night out.
Who's the, like the driest audience as far as humor goes? Would it be America? Would America be like just not understand what you're talking about?
I mean, yeah, I definitely have to figure out how to talk more slowly and enunciate things
Yeah,
differently.
I felt that.
But yeah, I don't know. I think I'm probably my least funny in certain parts of Europe. I think.
You're least funny.
Yes. And then I feel like that is the most scary part of the show to me. It's like if I start talking and then the chat isn't landing, then I get more panicked. So I make more bad jokes and then it just isn't. So I've definitely, yeah, I have memories of doing like a German tour where I was, I've never felt more unfunny and untalented in my life than on this tour.
Do your bandmates at least like try to save you?
No.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate
I mean,
that.
sometimes we riff back and forth a tiny bit, but yeah, I guess it's kind of, as the front person, you're sort of hosting the show as well as singing and dancing and all the other stuff. So it's kind of on me to do that while they're tuning guitars and stuff. But sucks for them because sometimes I'm like, we're going down, guys. There's nothing I can do. I can't help us. I'm not funny here.
Well,
I
look,
don't
it'll work in Australia. That's fine. Are the Australian shows and I think there's a festival in Japan as well. Is that it? The cycle is officially done then?
know. I think currently that's all that's on the books. Yeah. So we finish in Osaka in the middle of January. So yeah, in theory, that's all we have planned for the time being. But you never know. You never do know with these things. So
Are you expecting more down slash cat time, or are you going to start getting into the next phase of churches, whatever that may be?
I mean, I think if we try and take more time off, our manager at least will be like, for goodness sake, guys, come on. Like you're in a professional band. Come on. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like we'll figure it out as the year rambles on, I think.
Well, Lauren, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate your time. Good luck with the shows in Australia. I'm going to be getting back there for December, so I can't wait to see you guys on
Yay.
stage again.
Awesome. Thank you, Jude. Well, enjoy New York in the meantime.
I will.
Step around any poo because you don't know what it is.
Oh, I saw a human shit on the sidewalk last week.
At least when
What
I find ones inside this house, I know that it was cat related and it's
a
not, it's, like there's a safety to that crave.
world.
So, but all right, have a great day. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks, Lauren. Appreciate it.
All right, bye.
This episode is proudly sponsored by Audio-Technica Australia. Subscribe, rate, and review The Plug on your preferred podcast platform. And follow us on Instagram and YouTube at The Plug with Neil Griffiths and on TikTok at theplug.podcast to stay up to date with episode releases and giveaways.